us last week, we introduced the concept of nat barna. The Gemara tells us that if a tam has been traveling for a while, let's say, for example, I take a piece of meat and I put it onto a plate, even though it's a hot piece of meat. So some of the tam goes from the meat into the plate, and then wash off the meat, wash off the plate, and then an hour later I put fish, a hot piece of fish, on that plate. So presumably the tam that went from the meat into the plate now travels from the plate back into the fish, and presumably I have fleshig fish, and I'm not allowed to eat that fish together with the yogurt, together with milk. So one opinion, the Gemara says that's in fact the case, that you're not allowed to, because that's called the principle of tam. Tam just travels. And we pass the halacha b'hilchos that nat barnat is mutter, that since the tam has traveled already twice, it's already made two trips, the halach b'chazor, so that's already considered to be too low of a level of tam. That's what we call in halacha tam kolosh, the Rashba coined the phrase, and that tam is not a problem. And one is permitted to eat that fish together with milk. That's what we pass the halacha b'hilchos, knows in tam, knows in tam is mutter. We mentioned the shir last week, Rishama quick to point out that principle of not by not is only true when it comes to a davar hamutter. You wouldn't say a parallel halacha for a treifatam. Say, for example, you take it as a chazir and you put it onto a plate, and then you put kosher food onto the plate. You wouldn't say, well, the tam has traveled enough time to be mutter. No, a tam ha iser remains be isur li olavod. Only a tam ha mutter, which is called kolish tam. The tam has been weakened. And now you subsequently want the Issa Basul Chav to be chal on, and Issa can't be chal on a tam kolosh. That's what we pass in halacha. Hilchos are not by not is mutter. Question is, are there any exceptions to this rule? Are there any situations where not by not, where the kula of not by not breaks down? So the Gemara, in the same breath, when it tells us that the halacha is that not by not is mutter, and therefore, the Gemara says, this is another case that seems to be very, very similar, almost a parallel case, where the resulting halacha is actually the opposite. The Gemara says that if you have a vegetable that was cut with a knife, so if you have a fleshig knife to cut a part of a vegetable, so that's going to pose a problem. So those tznon shechachal v'sakin is also lacha v'kusach. So you have a fleshig knife. So if you think about it, it sounds like it's the same thing. That meat went into the knife, then the top of the meat comes into the vegetable. So what's the problem? It sounds like that should be not by not again. So why is the halacha that kind of a not by not is also lechol b'kusach? What's the difference between a ka'arash nosan b'osor in contrast to a vegetable that was cut within it? What is the difference between the two? So there's a machlekes samishonim, it's actually two opinions in Rashi. Where exactly lies the difference between the two cases? So one answer in Rashi says it's purely a metzias question, is that knives are dirty. People don't wash off the knives as well. Plates get to be washed off a little better. Knives are always greasy and mushy, all kind of stuff in them. Baruch Hashem, for the most part, I think our wives would disagree with this. So don't feel too bad about that. The Rishonim, the later Poskim, say that many, many people are very, very careful on the knives, and maybe we don't have to be so worried about those knives. But Mizbar Chazal apparently wasn't as clean. You can take a look at the back of your own restaurants and kitchens if you want. Some people have worked in the food industry. You can probably tell us a little bit about that tonight. Am I correct? The knives are not always up to 100% agreed upon. Okay, I'm not sure about the KRC, but we'll talk about the knives. So there is an assumption, says Rashi, that the knives are not just a question of tam, they're a question of the end. There's real schmutz, there's real food on the knives. So if you take a knife and you cut it with flay shakes, this is not just an asidus tam issue. We have to be concerned that there is goshamunis, some grease on the knife itself. If there's fat, there's chicken grease on the knife, and that's cutting the vegetables, so that is not, I'll try to say it without getting the tongue, that's a not a nap or not, that is a be'en, that's a be'en mamish. So whenever there's be'en mamish, obviously, sky's the limit, maybe 100 times over, but there's still be'en there, of course it's going to pose a problem. So if you go down that route, in understanding this Gemara of Tznon, Shechach, Mesach, and Shabbos, Osnach, and Makusach, then there's nothing unique about this. There's no chiddush about not by not that's taking place here. But there's another pshat in Rashi. Rashi says that maybe what's going on is as follows. That the Gemara is talking about tznon. Tznon is a sharp kind of a, it's not exactly clear what a tznon is, but whatever you think a tznon is, whether a radish or something else. So a tznon is something that's a davar charif. A davar charif, all of a sudden red flares go down. When we're dealing with a davar charif, we're dealing with something that's sharp. We know from other areas of Yeridei, we spoke about this in the past, that whenever you have a davar charif, that could potentially change a lot of rules. One of the major rules that davar charif trumps is the principle of Eino Ben Yomo. We spoke about this a couple weeks ago. The Gemara says in the second parak of Maseches Avodah Zarah that there was a certain kind of a food that was being produced by Goyim, that called shechusas. The Gemara says, you're not allowed to eat it. It's considered to be treif. Why is it treif? Because the Goyim would cut it, they would prepare it with their kalim. So it was an equipment issue. The food per se was cooked. It was a vegetable, but because it was processed and handled by the Goyish equipment, so you weren't permitted to buy it stam on the street. So the Gemara asked the Kashman, what do you mean? But it's stam kalim in a bnei yomam. We could assume that the kalim that we use were probably not used within 24 hours. So we have a principle called stam kalim and yomam. Whatever that's based on, whatever that means really is, from the mice that's the din, it's stam kalim and a bit yomam. So the Gemara says, no, this is much, much worse, because this is a dabba charif. And this being a dabba charif, it's something that's sharp. So sharp foods can somehow trump even in a bin yomam. They can do a million things. They can even take tam that would otherwise be a tam that's lefgam and turn it right back into tam l'shevach again. So that idea that a devacharif has the ability to change some of the kulas that we have in your day, we already know this. So comes Rashi in the second shot and says that's what's going on here as well. So when you have a not bar not, so the tam is very, very shvach. That was a bad word. I mean the Yiddish shvach, not the Hebrew shvach. It always gets tricky. So when you have a tam that's been schlepped through so many times, it's gone here and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It's ready. There's nothing left of it anymore. But if there's another charif, so then everything gets changed. And that's the problem of the tzinod. Not because there's shmutz there. Even if there wouldn't be any shmutz there, the knife would be totally clean. It's still considered to be a problem because of whenever you have a davar charif, so that overrides the otherwise kula of napana. So according to this understanding of Rashi, which many, many Rishonim subscribe to, so the charif you see here is as follows, that you can't just stop and call something a napana and call it a day. You have to look and see. Is there a significant amount of time here? It's not by not only something that applies when it's very, very kalush, as the Rashi said, it's been watered down and traveled, it's exhausted, nothing left of this time anymore. But if you have something present that could give this time a little bit of a kick, wake it up, a little bit of an energy boost, so then all of a sudden you have to reckon with it now. So it's based on this second interpretation of Rashi that Tosfos begins the story which sets the stage really for much of our issue with Zman Hazeh in terms of what we call the DEs and the fleshing equipment and the dairy equipment, etc. So Tosfos quotes in the name of the Rivan. The Rivan was one of the earlier by Tosfos, one of Rashi's son-in-laws. So Tosfos quotes a story in the name of the Rivan. It's a little bit unclear because it sounds like the story took place in Rashi's house itself. And it's not clear whether Rashi actually agreed to this. There's a little bit of a confusion as to who said what in the story, but the Rivan for sure said something. So Tosfos quotes the name of the Rivan that one time it happened. Doesn't say it happened one time, so it happens all the time. Yeah, there were beitzim, shenis bashu, bekaderish albosar. It was a pot that used to cook the chulim. Yesterday afternoon, we still cooked the chulim. And then for the lav malka, they made eggs, and they cooked up some eggs in the kaderish abishu albosar. And the osar rivan, lechol bechalav. That the rivan taskin, that you're not allowed to eat those eggs together with milk. Yes, the rivan, why not? So Kumar just said, it's mutter. What's the difference? It's a not bar not. The tam of the fleshes went into the pot. The tam of the pot goes into the eggs. So the eggs are considered basically to be parva. So why can't you eat the eggs with milk? It's said Rivan. No. If you look at the Lashna Gemara, it's dagam sha'ala b'ka'ora. The Gemara speaks about plates. It doesn't talk about pots. Why do they want to talk about pots? Why do they want to talk about pots? I'll tell you exactly why. Because the din is not true when it comes to a pot. The only time that you have this kula of not bar not being mutter is when you're dealing with a plate. Plate is not hot anyway. Chew the piece of food that's going onto the plate is hot. If everything would be cold, there would be no bleas altogether. That whole sugya would have ended already. But it's a kara. The bleas that are happening in a kara are definitely not on par with the bleas that are happening inside a kadera. The kadera, everything is boiling hot. The pot is hot. The food is hot. The water is boiling. Everything's hot. But you ain't getting a kara, so the plate itself is cold. It's just that there's some hot food that's being transferred back and forth. That's a very, very low medium, very, very low level of nesidas dam. It says the Rivan Mamsh Kalachaiva. Maduch by a knife, which is sharp, which has a sharp foot to it, it's a davacharif. There's no heat anyway. But afal pichein, Rashi says that there's a problem that trumps not but not. So Kalachaiva, when you're cooking in a pot, it says Rivan, all bets are off, all coolers are off, and the whole entire cool lock, stack, and barrel of Dagh Shalom Ka'orim, not but not, just fell by the wayside, but it's derech bishul. That's the famous psak of the Rivan. So other Rishonim say, they never heard of such a thing. So V'shteit, so first of all, who said that? Rashi, right? It's known. Where? V'shteit in the Gemara, anything like that? So Rishayim start pilfering back and forth with this Pesach of the Rivan. Is this correct or is it not correct? So how do we pass the halacha on the Shaila? So there are different nuances as to what the answer to that question is. There is a third possibility that appears in some Rishonim that maybe there's a difference between Bishul versus Tzli. We know from other areas, like in terms of Kasher and Kalim, that when Bliyas happen on the direct fire, that's a more of a Bliya. When a barbecue grill becomes treif, that's a big problem. You can't just take it and toss it into a pot of water. You have to kasher it with Eish. So we know that, generally speaking, more Bliyas happen through direct fire. So there's a third opinion in Rishon that says, maybe the Rivan's right, maybe he's not right, maybe somewhere in the middle. That if the Bliya was Derech Tzli, with a direct flame, so then we would not be able to apply the rule of Dagim Shol Bekor. That's too far away from that, but not being Mutter. If it's just the official, it's not so bad. Maybe the non-Rivan people are right. So you have a lot of different possibilities now. There are those who will accept the Rivan Legamre, those who reject the Rivan Legamre, and there are those who will walk the tightrope somewhere in the middle. So how do we pop? That's what you ask. So any one of these possibilities will appear in the later poskim. Generally speaking, what our practice is, the Ramah quotes the standard Ashkenazi practices as follows. The Kadrus of the Sfardi Yitzhak, the Shulchan Aruch paskes the Kulut. Shulchan Aruch quotes the Ramah, quotes the Rishon, never heard of such a thing. The Sfardi Rishon never heard of this chiluk. And the Gemara says, not as mutter, it's mutter legamri finish. And the Ramah says, no, we as Ashkenazim, we follow this view for the Galat Taisus, we are Cheshish for this sheet of the Rivan, and therefore we will not apply so quickly the kula of Nat Bar Nat, as long as it's Derech Bishul. That's what the general practice in our community is. However, the Ramah writes, since this is probably a Das Yochid, probably most of the Rishonim disagree with it, so we accept the Lechatchila, we're not going to accept the Bidiyevit, because we're not going to start trafing up the kitchens and, you know, let's say, for example, somebody had these dates in Shabbos Bashlu, Kederish or Posar, and then they went ahead and they put some cheese on it, they made themselves a cheese omelet with it, but after they throw it out, says the Ramadan. The Yevon will rely on the non-Rivan people, but normative practice in our kitchens, in our communities, is going to be, says the Ramah, we're going to be Choshish for this Rivan. It's because of this Chashash of the Rivan that we now have this institution called equipment issue. That if you ever think about it, so the very notion of what we call dairy equipment. They tell you, the Kol Tashkocha says that dairy is a dairy equipment. So what do those words mean? What do you mean dairy equipment? What they're basically telling you is that there's no dairy in it, no milchiks in it whatsoever. They're telling you that this piece of equipment was used to cook milchiks. That's very nice. So milchiks went into this equipment, now milchiks is coming out of that equipment into this parva food. According to Shulchan Aruch, the food is the parva. According to Shulchan Aruch, every dairy equipment is by definition cool, not by not being mutter. That's the psak, according to Mechaber. The only reason why we as Ashkenazim will not rely on that is because we paskin like the Ramah, we're chayshish for the shita of the Rivan. And therefore, since we're chayshish for the view of the Rivan, so we are not permitted to take food that's quote-unquote dairy equipment and just eat it like that with meat. We can't take the attitude, let's say, give you an example. Whether this is true or not depends on all the time. We take our Oreos. Let's assume for a second that there's no milchiks and Oreos. Let's assume for a second that they really are dairy equipment. I'm not commenting on either one of those two statements. But let's say we have Oreos, and they tell you that it's dairy equipment. So what does it mean? That means that one time there was milchiks that went into this machinery, and then when the Oreos that supposedly have parva equipment, parva ingredients in them, received a bliya of that milchiks, so not by not as mutter. The ikra did as mutter. According to Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, you can eat it with a piece of chicken together. But we as Ashkenazim say, no. You can't eat those Oreos together with a piece of chicken because that's called Napanat Derech Bishol, and Napanat Derech Bishol is a chumrah, the choshesh for the Rivan. Even though we are choshesh for the Rivan, so the post can point out, Medivar Mamurim, that means to eat it mamish together with meat. But nobody says, that you have to be choshesh for waiting. Nobody says, let's say, I ate my meat an hour ago. And now I'm ready to talk for dessert. I want to have my not-by-not of the Rivan's, or my not-not-by-not of the Rivan's Oreo cookies. So that lechor, everybody agrees would be mutter. That's why it's important to know whether something is D or whether something is D-E. Because if it's D, so then maybe it's real kabuchis in it, and then halach would be, you have to wait, you're not allowed to eat it in afterwards. And that would pose a problem, even according to the Shulchan Aruch. And that would pose a problem. But the evidence could potentially trace things up. Whereas anything is only DE, so then the worst it is that the Ashkenazi chumrah is not to eat it together with the food proper. That's generally the way we are knowing lemaisa. It's important to know. So different hashkacha organizations have different policies about how comfortable they are putting that simple DE. So some claim it's more confusing, less confusing. Better you got to fight it out between the hashkachas what the policy should be.
I have steak and onions on the plate. Yeah. You bring steak over onions into the plate because it's onions. Does it matter that they're not cracked? Meaning, can you not, would it make the next the piece of fish flation?
We would. If the onions, so first of all, usually by the time the onions are making it to your plate, they're usually not at the recharif anymore. Because cooked onions are not at the recharif. Even if you had, if you cut a raw onion onto your plate, so that could be a the recharif issue, possibly.
Eating it together.
Together, if you have meat in your mouth.
They're together physically, but you eat them at the same time, two different plates.
No. Eating them, they're in your mouth at the same time. That's called eating it together. Yeah, I think so. The post can point out that even the machmirim, this only makes sense when you're dealing with something which was, everything was ben yomo. We said already many times, whenever anything is eno ben yomo, the tam has already been sitting inside the walls of the pot more than 24 hours, and then anything goes. That even if it would be mamish chazer, it would be okay. So the chobro, what would it be as follows? Let's say I have a piece of equipment or I have a pot that I know that I cook fleshings in it, but I know I have a cooked fleshings in more than 24 hours. So if it's more than 24 hours and now I cook part of the food in that pot, so even according to the machmir of the revolt, it's not a problem. Because even if it would have been chazer, it wouldn't have been a problem. So kavu chayvi, it's only considered to be basar. So that's for sure the halacha, that the whole chumrah of equipment is only when it's a ben yomo. Does that mean that I can lechatchila go ahead and take a pot that's an eno ben yomo and cook food in it, a pyre food in it, knowing full well that I plan to eat that at milchiks? That was a big machlekes at poskim. So some poskim said that the same way that the Gemara says the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah, that they made a gezerah of eino ben yomo to ben yomo, that when you have a pot that I know for a fact hasn't been used for 24 hours for chazer, I'm not allowed to take it and cook kosher food. That's in the sefer derabbanan. The eved, the food's going to be kosher, but that's a violation of the derabbanan. Chazal were afraid that if you're cooking pots after 24 hours, so next time you're cooking pots within 24 hours, that's the last sugya of the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah. So some acharonim write that the same is true when it comes here, that if it would be a pot that's within 24 hours, this would pose a problem. This would be a chashash of also lechom kusach. I wouldn't be able to eat the cookies together with the meat if it would have been within 24 hours. So therefore, lechetchila, I'm not supposed to go ahead and cook food in a flesh and body, even though it's more than 24 hours, as part of that gezeira. And others respond, well, that gezeira was made on something that's really awesome. That gezeira was made on lechazer. That gezeira was made on the rivons, not by not. We have to start combining together with David, the Ramban, the end of the Zohar, and this. Who says such a thing? So that's a big machlokes haposkim. Adayim is that. This is very, very real shalom. It's halacha l'maaseh shalom. Your wife wants to make noodles in a fleshy pot, and the pot has not been used. You know for a fact it hasn't been used for 24 hours. So if she went ahead and made the noodles, thinking they're going to be parva, she doesn't know what she's going to do with the noodles, so she cooks the noodles in the fleshy pot. She didn't have any grandiose plans what to do with it, and then noodles are cooked, and then an hour later, one of your kids wants to put cheese on the noodles. So that's mutter, mikra, then that's mutter, because it happened already. It was already cooked in the pot, so now you can treat those noodles as being parva because it was more than 24 hours. According to the Shulchan Aruch, even if the pot was fleshing within 24 hours, it's okay. But according to the Ramon, our Ashkenazi practice, so you would be permitted if it was eidah ben yomo. Does that mean I can go to chetchila, go to the fleshing cabinet, going full well? That these my kids gonna want to put cheese on this in 20 minutes from now. Take a fleshy pot, cook up a bowl of noodles, and lechatchila go ahead and put cheese on it. So according to some poskim, yes, according to some poskim, you're allowed to do that because that why not? It's a problem. That there's no gezeir with the rabbanon on the shittus of rivon, and others say you're not allowed to do that. It's hard for me to say what the standard practice is. My gut feeling is your wives would probably throw you out if you would do that. But the ikra din is probably okay really to do that. Remember we had. I don't know which one of the kids it was. It must have been Zeb. He was a big like pasta and cheese kid at that time. I remember once Kufa where we had my wife had already cooked noodles in a fleshy pot, so it was ben yomo, and we were already reviewing those noodles as being a fleshy noodles. I'm just through a total fit. He was maybe 5 years old. Through a total fit that he has to have his cheese on it. And, no question about it. He has to have cheese on his noodles. So I took the noodles, put it into a plastic paper plate, whatever. I said, "Hey, you want to rely on the Shulchan Aruch?" I said, "I want to rely on the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam." Okay, he goes, "Hey, you're 5 years old. Yesh l'hakol, you can have big cheese on top of your noodles, but you're not eating in my not in our bowls." Okay. Anyway, it's like the cream cheese on the matzah that he had to say that when everyone else was eating flesh. So we had our issues.
What point did
the Vidyevit have to do with the Rambam? Well, Vidyevit, if you were ready for the Sheet, there are different dogmas of Vidyevit. The Ramah is made, even if it was Ben Yomam, that was the Rivon Asas Lagabri, Vidyevit, the Ramah says Vidyevit is okay. So that Vidyevit, the person would say, means you're ready to put the cheese on. Let's say a mamish cook for noodles that are literally fleshing by. I just made chulten an hour ago. So the Ramah writes that if you're ready to put the cheese on, you can eat it. But if you didn't put the cheese on, then you can't put the cheese on. But if the pot was, you know for a fact, was more than 24-hour pot, then you could put the cheese on. The machlek is supposed to be, can I even lechatchila cook the noodles, knowing full well that that's what I'm planning on doing? So it's this sugya of nat bar nat that sets the stage for a question that the all the Rishonim dealt with, a very, very practical question. We have to put ourselves back to like the Middle Ages for a moment, in terms of washing dishes. Now, washing dishes could potentially run into a lot of these issues of nat bar nat. So you have to go back to pre-dishwashers, pre-sinks, pre-running water, and try to figure out how in the world is a person going to wash dishes, and think about it. But the only way to wash dishes was the same only way to get hot water. So you had to go to the well, and you had to hope that either Yaakov's taking the rock off or Rivka's bringing you camels. Whatever was happening. I made the aura the other, just over Shabbos, I talked to my kids, they said that, everyone always talks about how the two scenes of the two wells of Chayesara and Vayetz are so radically different from one another. That in Chayesara, you know, Yitzhak's sitting in Yeshiva somewhere, and in the whole Shidduch, if he doesn't do a thing, there's no Shabbos or nothing, and also the Shidduch just plops, and, you know, Eliezer does all the work, and he comes in, here I am, and Baruch Abu Mazel Tov goes into the tent, and the game's over. So the amount of Shabbos was about zero. Whereas Vayetz, Yaakov's got to come, and he's sweating, he's pulling off rocks, and he's, kind of kunzit. So Yesh V'Yesh, different Pashas. You never know which Pashas Shidduch was right. But the point out something else that's different is that they both involve getting water from the well, but the exact opposite. That in Pashas Chayesara, so it's the girl who's, she's doing all the work to bring the water to the well, out of the well. Whereas in Pashas Yetze, Yaakov's providing for Rachel. So Rivka's giving Eliezer water, and he's giving some. You know, I'm not sure what the model is supposed to walk away with. I'm not sure what that tells you, supposed to pay for the date. I don't know what conclusion to draw from that, but there are two very, very different Pashas that the Torah is describing about the same wells, the same Shidduchim, just a couple of years later, and somehow things are very, very different. So I don't know if someday, maybe Friday night, we should do to talk one time, so I'll try to keep my observations about that. Anyway, back to our story. So, I forgot where to... Oh, yeah, wash dishes. So in the old days, you had to first get the water from the well, then you had to heat up the water, because if you wash dishes in cold water, so although most men won't necessarily aren't aware of this, but usually if you wash dishes in hot water, you usually get a little bit better job. So the Rishonim figured this out also. So how you do that? So you had to heat up the water. So what the practice was as follows, that they would have this like big tub. That was the yoyra, they would call it a big tub. They would come, go to the well, bring back their buckets of water, and they would fill it up into this big tub. They would put the tub onto the fireplace, whatever it was. They would heat up the water, and then they would take all the filthy dishes and throw it all into the tub. That was washing dishes in the days of Rishon. Taisus describes this process very, very clearly in the 8th Bet and so on. So now the question becomes as follows. So what would the din be if you threw fleishiks and milchik dishes in all at the same time? So your fleishiks and your milchik, everything's all thrown into this big tub of hot, boiling hot water together. What exactly happens? So Taisus raises the question, wait a second, maybe it's not so bad. Somehow our initial reaction is, it sounds like I just trafed up my whole kitchen. No, not so fast, that's Taisus. Maybe everything is okay. Why? Famous cloud. Not by not. Everything is nice and down by nice and down. What's the nice and down? So comes Taisus and says like this. Taisus says that, what are you worried about? That there's some tam inside the flesh of forks, there's some tam inside the flesh of dishes, inside the flesh of pots. What are you so worried about? So whatever tam went in, so that's tam number one. Now that tam is coming out. That tam is coming out. Where's it coming out to? Coming out into the water. It's swirling around the water. And eventually, it's going to hit into the other clay. So you're going to have a fleshik tam rolling into a milchik tam. You're going to have milchik tam flowing into a fleshik tam. So it says, Tosis, by the time the tam meet one another, it's okay. It's no sin tam by no sin tam. The tam has already traveled once. I'm sorry, already traveled twice. The tam went into the pot, then went out of the pot into the water. Whereas the other tam went into the pot, into the milchik pot, then came out of the milchik pot, into the water. So you have tam swimming around the water over here, that's a nat bar nat. You have tam swimming over here, that's a nat bar nat. The two tam come and give shalom aleichem to one another. Says, hey, what's the big deal? Nice and tam, and nice and tam, everything's hunky-dory, everything's good to go. So says, nice, you can wash your flesh, you can wash everything all at the same time, the same pot of water, no problem, everything is nat bar nat. So how many questions can we have on Taisus about? There should be like 16 different flags down on this Taisus.
I'm assuming that it's
nothing bad. Oh, okay, yeah. Depends. I don't know how it could be the reticence of the Balatosis, but wash the dishes first and then they put them into hot water. So wait, hold off for a second. So Tosis themselves make a lot of stuff. Hold the phone on this one. Is this really true? So first of all, they was not true according to Rivan, it's not true. Because according to Rivan, whenever there's a fire on, whenever there's a pot, whenever there's food cooking, so the game's over, that automatically trumps the entire sugya of Nat Barnat. Okay, and you have to fill Tosis every week. You have to Rivan, not except the Rivan. You know, we're not going to lose that much sleep over this Rivan, but that would be a potential flag down display. Also, just be able to exist in the Shitsa Rivan. But then Tosis and the Sefer Chumba and the Rosh, everybody starts to get into this discussion in a way. They say, whatever. Is this worse than Nat Barnat? So this is, you have to look at this top literally under a microscope. So the principle of Nat Barnat, the whole yisrael of Nat Barnat, as we said last week, that the Tom has already made two trips. That's what the words means. Hilchos and the Lashon Gemara is no sedam by no sedam. So a classic Nat Barnat is, let's say, even in the case we've under the light, we'll make it easy for us. I cook the eggs. So what do you mean I cook the eggs? I cook the egg in a pot that an hour ago I cooked chicken in. So an hour ago, the top of the chicken goes into the walls of the pot. So that's trip number one. That trip ends. Then relax a little bit, takes a nap inside the walls of the pot for a little while. And then all of a sudden, it comes out again, and it comes into the egg. So it has made two total and complete trips, and there is no milchus inside. So it already is a tam kolish, it's already a tam sheish, it's already a grandchild tam, and nasin tam, and nasin tam, and there's no milchus around. Now I'm going to superimpose milchiks on it, and I want to eat these eggs together with the kusach, with the yogurt. So that's what the Gemara says, that's okay. You know why? Even though, again, this is all derabban anyway, because it's only eating together, it's not derech bishul, but even if I would want to take those eggs and then cook those eggs with milk, that would be okay. That would not be basar b'chol, because dosan tishkenim b'basar, that's a tam sheni of basar, it's a not by not a basar, so that's okay. So comes to us and says, wait a second, hold on. When the tam rishon became a tam sheni, and it stopped, and it dead in its tracks, and there's still no milchiks around. But what would the halacha be if, let's say, I want to take I want to take these eggs that were cooked in a fleshy pot, and I want to cook these eggs into not a mil- not to eat these eggs back for a second. What if the first tom went into the pot, and then the second tom goes directly into milk? Would anybody in their right mind say that I could do as follows? I could take a fleshig pot and cook milk in a fleshig pot. You know what? Listen to this lumdus. It's a not bar not, right? Because it went in the first time into the pot, and now it's coming out the second time. It's a not bar not. That's ridiculous. The tom sheni is beisser. The tom sheni is bumping right into milk. Not bar not means when the first tom goes in, it comes out again, and it rests, and it's esnachta, and then milk comes superimposed. That's called tam sheni beheter. When the tam sheni is beisur, that's kederi shebishav abos loyvash b'chol. Of course, that's a problem. So come to Bishav and say, wait a second, over here, the tam of meat that went into these dishes, into this silverware, that was tam number one. Where's the tam sheni exactly? The tam sheni is coming into where? It's coming in resting? No, it's not. It's coming into the water. What's in that water? What's in that water is the tam of the other pot. You cook flesh and milchus. You're washing flesh and milchus dishes in the same yorin, to the same pan. So the two tamim are converging together. So what was Tosis dreaming? Why did Tosis think that was okay? So this is a very, very lumdish metaphysical machlokes. Do you view, when something comes out of a pot into water, do I say, it goes into this water, it's my side of the pot, my side of the line, and you have your bleas on your side of the line, and then the two bleas rest, and then they start batsirin together, they bump into each other, shalom aleichem, oh, that's already good, it's already not by not, it's already a tam sheni the head there. Or do I say, what are you talking about? The whole thing, it's one big one water, it's one chativ, it's one entity, it's one unit. The two tamim smash into each other. They smash into each other the second time around. There never was a tam sheni beheter. That's not called up. The chlal is not called up right now. A very, very lumdish adakas tikkum machlokes. How do you view washing out dishes? It makes all the difference in the world. If you hold that there was a tam sheni beheter, that it stopped. each time hit the water and it was declared its a neutrality, it's lost its fleshic status, that time has lost its milchic status, and now the two waters meet each other later, that's not banah, except according to Rivan. But if you hold that it's all one bli, it's all one entity, of course it's all a problem.
When the heat and the bath matter, let's take a Shabbos principle, like you take the hot water, pour it in the bath.
100%.
Cliche-ing
now. Who said cliche-ing? So this Yora, obviously you haven't seen washing dishes in the 1100s. So this Yora that's being described was on the fire. They used to take a pan of a big giant cauldron and fill it up with water, put it onto the fire, and then they would throw all the dishes inside it. So what's this? You're 100% right. There are more rights. And what would it then be if it would be a cliche? That everything would change. So we have to get to that point next week. So we're still assuming the worst case scenario, it's the Kli Rishon. So now we have two potential red flags on this story of Tosfos. Number one, according to the Rivan, for sure it's a problem because it's Derech Bishul. Even according to the non-Rivan people, who says that it's that the Tam are not Vasachas. And then the Rishon had another thing. Wait a second. Who says that the forks aren't touching each other? Forget about the waters touching each other. You throw in a bunch of filthy forks and pots and spoons and plates and everything into there. Fleishiks, milchiks, all one big balagan. Said maybe the fork are mamish touching each other. If they're touching each other, even the mekilim couldn't be mekil. The whole sphere of the mekilim was, it's coming out of the pot, it's going into the water, and it takes a rest, and it takes a breather in the water, and there's no other time till 3 seconds later. That's true if it's a big, big pot and everything is spread out. But if everything's thrown on top of each other, like most probably was, so then the whole game's over. So Tosfos, we have a lot of problems. And then ha'ayla gabi kula, to make matters worse, forget about the rifans derech bishul, and forget about the fact that the tam are converging in the water. Forget about the fact that the plates are touching one another. The biggest problem is, as somebody mentioned, somebody asked me before, aren't these pots dirty? Aren't you washing dishes? Yeah, we all know the story about probably our own wives have been probably do this something also. When you know that the Ozer is coming later, so why are you washing the dishes? What? How can I leave dirty dishes for the lady to wash? It's embarrassing. Why am I washing the dishes if you wanted a kashlam ice? Okay, so I think we've all experienced that to some degree. So the days of Valiantaisis, they took filthy dishes, threw them into this big yira. I imagine Russia, the dishes were probably pretty dirty then also. Threw them into the... Terrible, pretty bad. They were probably as old, there were probably still grease left on them from the 1100s. So they, probably the same pots. So they threw the pots in with the filth and the... So comes Taisis, comes the Rush and says, wait a second, this is the wrong sugya. This is not doing that for now. This is the other pshat and Rashi about the knife. This is schmutz. This is fleishiks with milchiks all together. You know what we call that? We have a phrase for that. When you have fleishiks and milch mixed together, it's called vas b'chol. So says the Rishonim, says the Rush, says the whole shalom is a mut shalom. This whole discussion is talking about when you're washing clean dishes. Good morning, you're washing clean dishes, then you can discuss that. But now, these are dirty dishes, and therefore we have a big problem. So this set the stage for our entire discussion of washing dishes. So what we discussed now is the worst case scenario of washing fleishiks and milching dirty dishes together on the same pot, on the same stove. That's a disaster for a variety of reasons. Most of our washing dishes is not quite that. There are usually a few other mitigating factors, whether it's cliche-y, whether it's eroy, whether it's soap, we didn't even throw that into the mixture yet, whether it's eroy, we have a lot of other things to discuss. Hopefully, it's Hashem, next week, we'll try to take some of the flaws that we had in terms of nafanan, and then try to see how this takes us to the next level in terms of washing our dishes. Thank you.